one woman's tirade against poor writing and problematic romance. My name is Lee, and this is episode 36, chapter 9 of 50 Shades Darker. As usual, content warnings will be in the episode description, and if there are any that I missed, please let me know and I'll be happy to add them. Chapter 9. It's been a minute since I've recorded an episode. You know what? I need to stop saying that because for now, it's just going to be a minute between episodes, and that's okay because I'm focusing on other things right now because I'm trying to make a living under capitalism. So we're all just doing our best. You know, y'all know how it is. Y'all know how it be. Chapter 9. Last chapter, they're in the shower. Anna says, "Hey, Christian, guess what? You love me." And Christian's like, "Yeah, sure, I guess." And Anna will be riding this high for pages. Just putting that up front. So they step out of the shower, and Anna is like, "Hey, can I try something? I want to dry you off." And so she's touching him just using the towel. So it's not her hands touching him, it's the towel. And that seems to be pretty effective. Like, he kind of tenses up, he's a little nervous about it, but he actually, like, lets her dry his entire back, even the, like, no-go areas that they figured out with the towel. And then on his front side, she actually has him hold a towel and just, like, has her hand, like, guiding his hand. So she's kind of sort of drying him off using him, which is, you know, one of those moments where I kind of gotta hand it to him. This is a nice creative way to have this physical contact, to have this, like, connective experience of drying each other off after a shower and still work around Christian's trauma and his touch aversion. This is the sort of communication, this is the sort of creativity, this is the sort of meeting each other where they're at that they needed to be doing from the beginning, from day one, page one, book one. This is how you make it work, you know? You have an actual fucking conversation to find each other's limits, to find each other's boundaries, and you find ways to feel connected and feel affectionate to each other within those boundaries. And no, it doesn't look like every other relationship out there, but that's not the important part. You, especially in this, like, private moment between the two of them, who the fuck cares what it looks like, right? As long as it feels right for the two of you, that's the only thing that matters. But I feel like they were both kind of stuck in their own mental conceptions of their various different, like, relationship escalators, you know? Which, like, for those not familiar with the term, the relationship escalator is, like, you meet, you start dating, and then eventually you move in together, and eventually you get engaged, and eventually you get married, and eventually you have kids, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, the path, the very, like, monogamy normative, heteronormative path to the white picket fence and the 2.5 kids, right? Which is absolutely not the relationship structure that works for everyone. And so Anna, I feel like, had this relationship escalator in her head that was very similar to that. Christian had this, like, very kinky relationship escalator in his head where it's like, we meet and she signs the contract and she's at my beck and call and we do scenes together on the weekends and whatever. Like, you know, like, he had his whole thing. This is how his relationships looked in the past. This is what he thinks it's gonna look like in the future. And when they are finally, like, a good chunk into the second book of the series, able to step out of those fantasy worlds that they've built in their heads and those fantasy relationship escalators that they are just trying, they have been trying so desperately to cling to, and now they're actually willing to see the person in front of them and go, oh, right, that's not gonna work here. Now they're finding ways to actually connect. Is Christian still an abusive, manipulative douchebag? Yes. Do I think that Anna would still be much better off with someone else? Yes. But at least they're having moments now. At least they are occasionally turning to face each other and going, okay, you're the person I'm dating. Okay, let's see what we can do with this, right? Oh yeah, so then they're talking about the first time they had sex, which is, if you remember, the first time that Anna has ever had sex. Christian describes it as robbing her of her virtue, and then immediately goes on to say that because he, quote-unquote, took her virginity, or as he says, quote unquote robbed her of her virginity, ew, it means that she is his completely. Ew, yikes, barf, no, all of the words. That's not how that works. There is no special intrinsic bond that you forge with someone just because they happen to be the first penis that goes into your vagina. And likewise, you don't form a special bond with someone just because they're the first vagina your penis goes into, or literally any other configuration that you would consider the first time you have sex. Like, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't mean that that person is yours forever. It doesn't mean that there's some special bond between you two or some special claim that you have over the other person. Like, that's just so fucking gross to me. Yes, maybe the first person you have sex with, you're gonna get into a long-term relationship with them and whatever, you're gonna be deeply committed to them. And maybe having sex for the first time with that person is like a bonding experience in your relationship. Like, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen or that that experience isn't valid, but there is a vast difference between that and, oh, I took your virginity, so now you're mine. You're just entirely mine. Because that's, no, that's not, oh, we did this special thing and it was a new experience for you and, you know, we love each other and trust each other and so now we have like an even stronger bond. Like, that's fine. That's cute. If you've experienced that, I love that for you. That is not this controlling, possessive, I took your virginity and now you're mine. Like, that's extremely possessive, heteronormative, monogamy normative shit that Christian is saying. And of course, Anna is like agreeing, like she is, yes, I am yours completely. I mean, okay, if that's how you see it, sure. But ooh, I just would prefer both of you to do a little bit of unlearning here. It would be nice. Oh my god, okay, so I'm not 100% sure if this is like a UK thing because E.L. James is British, or if it's just a personal E.L. James thing, or if it's a Gen X or a boomer thing. I don't know what generation E.L. James is. I think she might be Gen X. I don't fucking know. But this is like an absolutely fundamental disconnect in worldview between E.L. James via the perspective of Anna and myself. So they're still staying at this hotel, but they're going somewhere. Christian is taking Anna somewhere. It's going to be another like surprise date. And so they like, when they checked in, there was a valet that like took Christian's car and parked it. And so now the valet is bringing it back to them so they can go drive to wherever Christian's taking Anna. And Christian gives the valet this like massive tip. Because he's Christian, so, and he likes to throw his money around. So this is the one of those times where I'm like, yes, absolutely, tip your service workers obscenely well if you can afford to. Whereas Anna is described as like looking at Christian disapprovingly, and I forget exactly what her thought is, but she thinks something like, really, or like, why would you do that? Or like, that's the sentiment, is like, why would you tip him so much? And like, sweetheart, I know this valet works at a swanky hotel, but he's still a fucking valet. He's still a service worker. He is literally a fucking cog in this rich person's like nice experience. I fucking guarantee you he is not paid enough to live on. And like, maybe it would be different in the UK, but here in America, service workers rely so fucking heavily on tips to survive. And Anna, maybe you wouldn't, like, in universe, maybe you wouldn't understand that as well because you worked at a hardware store, which from my understanding is not typically a tipped position. But like, still, I don't know how you get to adulthood in the 21st century in the US and not understand anytime you can tip a service worker well, you fucking better tip them well, because otherwise they might not be paid enough to cover their bills. And like, anyone outside the US listening to this right now, I know, it's a weird concept, it's a fucked up system, believe me, I agree. I absolutely wish we could just all be paid enough to survive and not have to do this whole tipping bullshit. But here we are, we do, you gotta tip. Like, literally, if you're going out somewhere in the US and you can afford to pay for the thing, but you can't afford to tip the workers, sorry, you can't afford the thing. I don't know, that's my stance on it. Like, going out to a restaurant, if I can't afford to tip, I can't afford to eat at that restaurant right now. Like, I can't imagine having a service worker do something for me and then not tipping them, or like watching someone give someone more money to survive off of and disapproving of that. Like, that's just such a foreign concept to me. I almost feel like I'm not being very articulate about it right now, because like, you literally, you worked at a hardware store to help get yourself through college, and you're still graduating with all these student loans, and you don't understand how someone else who is also at one of the bottom rungs of the ladder deserves more money than they fucking get. Like, I don't, if it's a British thing, fine, whatever. If it's a deliberate Anna's character trait thing that she disapproves of large tips, well, look at that. We've got our first major thing that I dislike about Anna. Oh, fuck. Oh my God. Okay. This fucking moment. This might be one of my least favorite moments in the book so far. So, last chapter, Layla got into Christian's apartment building and trashed Anna's car while she slashed the tires and, like, poured paint on it. And now, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, Christian's rich, he can pay for it to be repaired. In Christian's mind, he's like, I'm ordering you a brand new car. That car that can have the paint redone and the tires replaced, it's going in a landfill now. We're ordering you another new car. Fucking rich people. Whatever. We knew Christian only pretends to be philanthropic, because any bazillionaire who's trying to be philanthropic is obviously going to go about it the wrong way and obviously going to only do it for public attention. So that's my opinion on all of his charity efforts that Anna keeps referring to. When it actually comes to not being incredibly fucking wasteful, well, here we are. Actions speak louder than words. So, by the way, mind you, he has already, like, ordered her a new car, but now they're out driving and he's like, hold on, we're taking a detour. And he takes her to a car dealership for, like, a different brand of car. And he's like, actually, we're gonna get you one of these cars instead. Why? I don't know. I changed my mind. We're getting you a different brand new car, and I'm going to cancel the order of that other car that I just ordered. So what's gonna happen to that car? Who the fuck knows? So anyway, they're at this dealership. They're going through the, like, figuring out what car they're getting with the dealer. And Christian says, what color, Anastasia? And Anna's like, fuck, I don't know, black? He frowns. Black is not easily seen at night. And Anna says, you have a black car. And he just scowls at her. No explanation. No, just, I don't care if I have a black car. You are not getting a black car. So, controlling as fuck right away, even when he's, quote unquote, giving her a choice. And so now she's getting snarky. She says, canary yellow then. And Christian, again, makes like a disapproving face. Anna is like, fine, what color do you want me to have? Christian says, silver or white. Bitch, this is so fucking, I can't stand this. This is awful. This is absolutely giving her the tiniest, barest little minimum amount of choice to make her feel just a little bit better about how controlling he is all the time. But then it's like even worse than that, because it's not actually a choice. It's, okay, what do you want? No, you chose wrong. Here are the actual options that I'm willing to give you that I didn't say at first, and I made you do this whole dance of naming other colors first so that I had an opportunity to shoot them down before I gave you what your actual options are. Like, that's so... I'm just making angry faces right now. Like, I don't even have the words for it. That's fucking insidious. It's like the illusion of choice. But he's actually still just maintaining complete and utter control over the situation, because she's getting the kind of car that he has chosen for her in one of the colors that he has approved for her. That's bullshit. That's not actually choice. That's just, like, it honestly, it really does feel like a manipulation tactic to make her feel a little bit less controlled. Even though she absolutely still fucking is so, so under his control. It just, ugh, I hate it. I hate it so much. Okay, so they get the car ordered, whatever. Then they go to the marina because, of course, Christian has a boat and he wants to show Anna that boat. And so he takes her out on the boat. And just like with the glider, at one point he's like, okay, I'm gonna go do something with those sails over there. You take the wheel. No? How about some kind of prior discussion? Any consent getting? Any negotiation of this at all? Because, like, I don't know. Once, like I said, I'm biased because I hate driving literally anything. Being in control of a large mechanized thing that could at any moment crash and kill me and everyone around me is terrifying to me. I hate it. I avoid it whenever possible. However, I think even if I was reasonably comfortable driving a car, I would probably still be pretty terrified of driving a boat or a plane, both of which operate, you know, in different mediums than a car. One is in the sky, another one is in the water, and therefore are at least feel very different than driving a car. I don't know how different they actually are, but like, sounds pretty scary to me, and it sounds pretty reasonable to have that be something you're afraid of, especially when it's just dumped on you with absolutely no fucking warning at all whatsoever. And actually, Anna does react with a good amount of fear. She's like, I don't know about this. And he's just like, no, you'll do fine. And just like leaves her there. And like, once again, yeah, it's fine. And he's gone for like a couple minutes and then he comes back and takes over the wheel again or whatever. But it still, it just, consent is so important. And like giving her a way out as well, like at the very least, asking if she's up for it and demonstrating that you are a safe person to say no to. Like, that is such an important part of consent too. Cause like, yeah, he can ask her, hey, do you want to take the wheel for a sec? But he has over and over and over again demonstrated that when she says no to him, or when she tries to assert a boundary to him, he either tramples over it and completely ignores it, or gets angry at her. He has absolutely not cultivated a safe environment for her to say no to him if she doesn't want to do something. So there's just so many barriers to her consent and her emotional safety in that moment. Like, I think later, actually, at some other point in this chapter, I don't remember exactly when, Anna is like thinking to herself, he's so dedicated to my safety. Like, he cares about it so much. And that's one of the ways that he shows that he loves me. And like, I kind of agree with her, but he has such a narrow view of what assuring her safety looks like. It's, you know, buying her the safest car that he can and making sure that she wears a lifeboat when they're on his sailboat or whatever. That's his idea of keeping her safe, which, like, sure, fine. But he completely ignores and actively, in fact, demolishes her emotional safety, her mental safety. And that's such a crucial part of a relationship feeling safe. It's not just about physical safety, although that is important too. It's about emotional safety, mental safety, feeling okay to say no to your partner is such a basic thing. And he just tries to prevent her from doing that in subtle and not so subtle ways all the fucking time. It's awful. So my last note, I didn't have a huge amount of notes for this chapter. It's like a lot of fluff. It's whatever. Page 216. Yes, you're a lucky bitch, my subconscious snaps, but you have your work cut out with him. He's not gonna want this vanilla crap forever. You're gonna have to compromise. Which, like, okay, her subconscious is kind of just like her voicing all of her doubts and fears and whatever, and like that, you know, the brain weasels. That's what her subconscious represents. That anxiety, that insecurity, that fear that he's not actually into you for who you are in this moment, that is going to eat this relationship from the inside out. And this is where, once again, these two are so incompatible. Like, I still feel like even if Christian wasn't an abuser, which, like, he is, and that is more than reason enough to leave, but even if he wasn't, I still feel like they're so incompatible, they would probably both be happier dating someone else. But they're not. So they really need to be continuing to communicate about, and, like, not just, hey, are you still happy with me? Yes, of course I am. How many times do I have to tell you that? Which is about how that conversation has gone so far, which accomplishes nothing. It accomplishes about 5 seconds of reassurance for Anna and is also incredibly fucking patronizing and condescending on Christian's part. But, like, actually sit down with each other and have conversations every so often, checking in about, are we both still getting what we want out of this relationship? Are we both still getting, you know, our needs met? Is Christian still okay with being vanilla? Is Anna still not interested in being kinky? Because, like, it kind of feels like maybe she's ready to dip in a toe or two into kink. And Christian's been acting really fucking weird about that. See previous episodes. But they need to be communicating about it, like, continuously. And also, Anna needs to be doing a lot of work on herself as well to deal with these insecurities and these anxieties if she wants to continue on in this relationship. Because otherwise, it is going to rot out from under them sooner or later. Like I said earlier, feeling safe, feeling emotionally safe in a relationship is so fucking important if you want it to last any time at all. And, like, I get it. Like, insecurities happen in a relationship. Fuck, dude, I'm anxious as fuck. I'm insecure as fuck. Like, I'm dealing with insecurities and fears about my relationships all the time. Why do you think I'm in fucking therapy? But, like, I'm also talking to my partners about it. I'm talking to my girlfriends about it when those insecurities come up. And even sometimes when I'm like, oh, hey, there's a little insecurity. It's just kind of knocking at the door right now. It's like, hey, do you want me here? And I'm like, okay, let's cut that off before it's even really a problem by bringing it up with my girlfriend and seeing what we can do to make me feel a little safer in this situation, whatever the situation is that's bringing up the insecurity, you know, while also still making sure that she is in a relationship that she's happy with and she's still getting what she wants and needs out of the relationship with me, you know? That's how healthy relationships happen. That's how relationships have longevity, is if you're communicating. But of course, I've also ranted in the past about how Christian absolutely needs to communicate back with Anna, like, even if she is bringing up her insecurities with him, which she has kind of tried to, he just dismisses them, so he is absolutely not doing his part to communicate either, and that's super important. Like, I don't ever want to feel like the blame is falling entirely on Anna, because of course it's fucking not. I would still say the majority of the blame for the bullshit in this relationship is squarely on Christian Gray's shoulders. But also, Anna, girl, you don't have to dive into the deep end of kink stuff in order to have a hot, caring boyfriend that you love. You really don't, I promise. There are so many other gorgeous, caring people out there who are either vanilla or going to give you a much more 101 level kink experience if that's what you're starting to want. That's all I have to say about that. So, that was my last note for the chapter. It is quite a bit of fluff. They fuck in the boat. Yay. Chapter ends. So, chapter over. Hopefully chapter 10 will be coming soon-ish. We'll see. I do want to say, for anyone who uses Google Podcasts like me for the primary podcast listening platform, you've probably seen this by now because they have notifications everywhere, but as of April, Google Podcasts is shutting down. So if you would like to keep listening to this podcast and whatever other podcasts you listen to, please make sure to export your subscriptions to a different podcast listening platform. Abandon ship, it's going down. The golden age of podcasts might just be waning a little bit. That's for someone who is much better at, like, business analytics than I am to decide. This is the second podcast platform that I have used to listen that has now gone under, so I'm seeing some things happen, but that's not my area of expertise. Just wanted to let you know. With that, thank you so much for listening to my latest rant. My name is Lee. You can find my non-sex work social media at allmylinks.com/leecartist, and you can find my sex work social media at allmylinks.com/candykittenpodcast, can be found at allmylinks.com/thecurdledpod, and patreon.com/thecurdledpod, where I am still doing dramatic readings of each chapter about as often as I'm doing public episodes, but if you want access to those, throw a couple bucks my way, thank you. Be sure to check the episode description for the spellings on all of those links. And if you have questions, comments, concerns, or want to make a one-time donation not through Patreon, you can get in touch with me at curdledinkpodcast@gmail.com. If you can't or don't want to support me monetarily, please rate and or leave a review on your podcatcher of choice, or tell a friend, post on whichever social media platforms you still use. I recommend Blue Sky. If you're not on there yet, I've been having a pretty good experience there so far, but we'll see what happens. Do whatever you want to do to spread the word about this humble podcast. That would be so, so appreciated. The logo is by Reese Jones at tearlessrainart.tumblr.com. And of course, until next time, remember your rack. That's risk-aware, consensual kink. Okay, bye!
I did the math right. Episode 36, chapter 9. Yep, okay. Great.
Heteronord admit it. Oh my god.
Where'd my bookmark go? Oh, there it is.
Nope, that's not what I'm trying to do.